He knew only one person to whom he could talk frankly about his despair, in the middle of the night or in broad daylight. Though he was only 37, his mom and dad were long gone. He had no brothers or sisters. Friends had tried to comfort him after the catastrophe, but he'd been too pained to talk about what had happened, and he kept them at a distance so aggressively that he offended most of them. Now he picked up the phone, put it in his lap, and called Michelle's mother, Beth McKay. In Virginia, nearly 3,000 miles away, she picked up the phone on the first ring.
"Joe, did I wake you? You know me, dear. Early to bed and up before dawn."
"Henry?" he asked, referring to Michelle's father.
"Oh, the old beast could sleep through Armageddon," she said affectionately.
She was a kind and gentle woman, full of compassion for Joe, even as she coped with her own loss. She possessed an uncommon strength. At the funeral, both Joe and Henry had needed to lean on Beth, and she had been a rock for them. Hours later, however, well after midnight, Joe had discovered her on the patio behind the Studio City house, sitting in a glider in her pajamas, hunched like an ancient crone, tortured by grief, muffling her sobs in a pillow that she carried with her from the spare room, trying not to burden her husband or her son-in-law with her own pain. Joe sat beside her, but she didn't want her hand held or an arm around her shoulders. She flinched at his touch. Her anguish was so intense that it had scraped her nerves raw until a murmur of commiseration was like a scream to her, until a loving hand scorched like a branding iron. Reluctant to leave her alone, he'd picked up the long-handled net and skimmed the swimming pool, circling the water, scooping gnats and leaves off the black surface at 2 o'clock in the morning, not even able to see what he was doing, just grimly circling, circling, skimming and skimming, while Beth wept into the pillow, circling and circling, until there was nothing to strain from the clear water except the reflections of cold, uncaring stars. Eventually, having wrung all the tears from herself, Beth rose from the glider, came to him, and pried the net out of his hands. She had led him upstairs and tucked him in bed as though he were a child, and he had slept deeply for the first time in days. Now, on the phone with her at a lamentable distance, Joe set aside his half-finished beer.
"Is it dawn there yet, Beth?" "Just a breath ago." "Are you sitting at the kitchen table, watching it through the big window? Is the sky pretty?"
"Still black in the west, indigo overhead, and out to the east a fan of pink and coral and sapphire, like Japanese silk." As strong as Beth was, Joe called her regularly, not just for the strength she could offer, but because he liked to listen to her talk. The particular timbre of her voice and her soft Virginia accent were the same as Michelle's had been. He said,
"You answered the phone with my name. Who else would it have been, dear? Am I the only one who ever calls this early? Rarely others, but this morning, it could only be you."
The worst had happened 1 year ago to the day, changing their lives forever. This was the first anniversary of their loss. She said,
"I hope you're eating better, Joe. Are you still losing weight?"
"No," he lied. Gradually, during the past year, he had become so indifferent to food that 3 months ago he began dropping weight. He had dropped 20 pounds to date.